Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Entrepreneurial Excellence Radio Show, highlighting women in business in your community. I am Heather L. Tapia, Prosperity Advisor, and I am so grateful to have you tuning in. You can participate in a couple of ways to be part of our show. You can call in and talk to a guest or myself at 646-595-3440, or simply go to www.blogtalkradio.com/withinsight. Register and be part of our chat. We're here every Wednesday at 2 p.m. Eastern, so tune in and get to your excellence. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Entrepreneurial Excellence Radio Show. I'm Heather L. Tapia, Prosperity Advisor, and your host. We've got a fabulous show lined up for today. We are theming the concept of sound healing, one of my favorite topics, and we have guests Michael Cohen of Curtain, which is an amazing healing experience of chanting and drumming and meditation. So I'm looking forward to having him on the line shortly. Just wanted to start off how we normally do with some community action and updates. And there's some fun things going on here in Columbus, Ohio. Of course, we've mentioned multiple times my nonprofit Purpose for Women International supporting International Women's Day on March 8th, and I'm so grateful to have Tony Saboni on the line because our nonprofit is going to have a table at his fundraising event next Wednesday at the Funny Bone. Tony, are you with us?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you very much for having me.
Not a problem. Well, again, International Women's Day is, you know, the purpose is to highlight women, inspire, honor their business achievements, and really celebrate community and culture. And once you get involved with community action and this philosophy of gratitude, which is my love and business philosophy, it's always important to connect with others and have a thought process of giving back. And we know that there are tons of opportunities out there in the world to do that. But I encourage you to look locally first. Yeah, it's great to send money to Africa and all this, and they absolutely need it, and clean water. But you'd be surprised how many people are starving locally, how many people are suffering locally, and how much good you can do by donating an hour or two of your time a week and how it can make you feel, in addition to, you know, putting some money behind it and getting that tax write-off. So, Tony, why don't you introduce yourself and tell the audience about your fundraiser event and what got you started?
Yes, thank you. My name, again, is Tony. I'm a retired school teacher and the founder of the American Pie Party. And our mission basically is fighting cancer with pie-in-the-face humor. And again, next week, National Pie Day, which is January 23rd. And it's easy to remember because it's as easy as 1, 2, 3 to hold an American Pie Party. On our website, AmericanPieParty.org, we have a downloadable kit that teaches people how to organize and host their own pie party to benefit their chosen anti-cancer charity. It all started 35 years ago. Actually, 1979, I was teaching 4 or 5 years, and I went to my colleague, Carol Lowe, and she, I was frustrated, and I asked her, what can I do? I'm not sure if I want to teach the rest of my life. And she said, specialize in something. So I went home, and Johnny Carson was analyzing humor, and he said, humor is the extreme of something. And I gave it some thought, and God gave me the thought of a pie in the face is the extreme physical comedy act, and cancer is the extreme physical tragedy. And henceforth, the American Pie Party was born. We recruit celebrities. And again, at the Funny Bone on National Pie Day at 4:30, we will be having a number of local celebrities accepting a pie from a cancer survivor. And the beneficiary, by the way, at the Funny Bone is Christians Overcoming Cancer. Our celebrities include State Representative Mike Spinziano, City Councilman Zachary Klein, OSU former football players Jimmy Bell and Jamal Luke, Boyce Lancaster from OSU Classical Music, and Steve Ulrich from Flyers Pizza. And, you know, we enjoy what we do, and we're reminded that, you know, cancer has affected all of us in some way or another, and that's our goal is to fight cancer with pie in the face humor.
Thank you so much, Tony. And, you know, I agree with you 1,000%. Cancer affects everyone. I had, you know, abnormal cells when I was a freshman in college. My granny died of cancer. My mom died of cancer. I'm sure everybody in my family is dying of cancer right now. And so, you know, it definitely does touch people. I think what's important for the audience to know about Christians Overcoming Cancer, and Mary Jenkins is the founder, top organizer of that, and is that it doesn't focus on the research aspect. There's tons of charities already out there doing that, and they're very important and they're larger. What is valuable and different, I think, about Christians Overcoming Cancer is they focus on the local family and their immediate needs, because you've got doctor bills, but you also have your regular bills. If your child is sick, or your wife, your husband, they can't work, or you can't work because you have to stay home, and bills still keep coming. And so what Christians Overcoming Cancer does is they use their money, their resources, to help families stay afloat and provide them with what they need to maintain and eliminate some of that stress that finances can oppress on us. So I think it's a great local charity here in Columbus, Ohio, and they're doing really good work.
You know, thank you for pointing that out. And, you know, Mary has shared with us also that, you know, the larger foundations go to her foundation, Christians Overcoming Cancer, to disseminate the, you know, the funds, because the larger foundations, Nationwide Children's Hospital, you know, they cannot give money to the families. And like you said, you know, the bills are paid for those families that are going through treatment. So thanks
right.
for pointing that.
Yeah, I think it's important now that I've got a nonprofit and I'm, you know, my last year was really about immersing myself in more of a local community action, more so than just my volunteering. I've been volunteering for well over 10 years in different things around town, and it helps fill me up and remind me that it could always be worse. And I think we do have to have that sense of gratitude and appreciation as we walk through life. And so now I'm getting absolutely more politically involved, more involved in local community issues. And as I travel with Purpose for Women International, I'll be getting involved in local and international issues in other communities. And, you know, it doesn't take much to give back a little bit of your time or $5. Want to mention briefly, at the Funny Bone, we'll be out in the patio, and International Women's Day will have a table. We'll be doing video testimonials and hopefully getting some extra video of the pies in the faces and some interviews and fun stuff. And I know that you've got a couple sponsors besides the Funny Bone and the charity that are helping out to make this event happen. Why don't you, you know, talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, thank you again. Yeah, Flyers Pizza picked up what we're putting down, and basically each manager, general manager at the 8 stores surrounding Columbus at Flyers Pizza will be accepting a whipped cream paper plate pie in the face from an individual on National Pie Day when we're having our event at the Funny Bone. Flyers Pizza, you know, we appreciate their backing, and it's stop by at Flyers Pizza. It's a quality pizza, that's for sure.
Well, and I had an opportunity to talk with Mark and get the scoop on what's happening. What you can do while you're in there making your donation on National Pie Day, which is next Wednesday, the 23rd, each location is going to have a different window of time that they'll be less busy where they can accommodate this pie in the face to their executives. So, you know, there are locations pretty much in every suburb. I'm going to go back to my computer and read off that list in a second. So just, you know, look up Flyers Pizza, F-L-Y-E-R-S, Pizza in the local Central Ohio area and find a location near you. And when you find that location, give them a call either, you know, earlier in the afternoon on Wednesday or the day before to find out what's their window of availability because, you know, they're going to be making pizzas and food for people. So we have to appreciate they're still a functioning business. What you will then be able to do is walk in and even up until Wednesday, you can do it today, in fact, and for as little as $5 donation, you'll get to fill out basically a raffle card submission, and they will be picking one winner to win a free pizza a month for 12 months. So if you like pizza, what a great way to give back to charity as well as, you know, get some free food out there. So any Flyers Pizza, they've got a Blacklick location, Galloway, Grove City, Groveport, Hilliard, Palland, Dublin area, as well as West Jefferson. So stop in and see them at flyerspizza.com, and obviously your local, you know, web search will help as well. We're having an event on Facebook for those Facebook fans of mine. Again, it's always helpful if you go to Entrepreneurial Excellence Radio Show on Facebook and like us and tell us who you want us to interview, what topics you want us to cover. And you'll see the invite to our event, so you can RSVP to that and show up at the Funny Bone or tell us what Flyers Pizza you're going to show up at. What else do you want the public to know about, you know, a pie in the face for cancer and maybe some of your other ideas for future fundraising events?
Yeah, well, I like to relate to it. It has unlimited potential. There are some famous celebrities like Sharon Osbourne, John Stamos, Jeff Gordon, who have their own anti-cancer charity. And Jack Hanna took a pie in the face for St. Jude's on our national online auction. And I just like to have people dream with me in that, can you envision a national online auction, and would people like Sharon Osbourne, Jeff Gordon, and John Stamos, would they take one pie in the face to benefit their own anti-cancer agency on a national online auction? That's just one example of what can be done with this program. We could also have a golf outing in Las Vegas with 100 entertainers, mostly comedians, and formulate a golf scramble, which is very, very easy to do. Have the seven winners make a choice, whether take a pie in the face or point to a consenting golfing participant. It really has unlimited potential. Anyone, anywhere, anytime can have their own American Pie Party by using our downloadable American Pie Party kit on our site, AmericanPieParty.org. And again, Heather, thank you so much for this opportunity to share our program and share our mission. And best of luck to your work with the International Women's Conference coming up on March 8th. And again, thank you so much for listening and sharing your message too.
Well, thank you, Tony, for taking time out of your busy day to give us a buzz. And folks, you know, come participate in this local opportunity. But again, like Tony said, it's national. So $5, if you live outside of Columbus, Ohio, will help support a family in need. And you can find agencies in your area as well. So, Tony, have a fabulous day. Thanks for popping in. And we will be chatting soon. And I will see you next Wednesday at the Funny Bone.
God bless you, and good pie.
Pie, pie. Have a good day. Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
All right, everyone, again, thanks so much for tuning in to Entrepreneurial Excellence Radio Show. Our theme today is Sound Ascension Healing, and we've got an amazing guest that I've had the pleasure of listening to for several years, who is an amazing musician and inspiration. He does Curtin, and I loved, loved, loved going to listen to him and his band, his group, play music. And you could sit, and we would do it at a church here in Columbus, and you could sit in the pew and, you know, meditate. Myself, as a dancer, I was in the back room dancing my butt off and jamming out and dancing through the aisles in church, and it just felt really cool and freeing. It was a lot of fun. And then he's been touring the world doing a lot of good stuff. So what I wanted to do was first talk a little bit about my experience with sound healing before we get Mike on the line, and help the audience, help you guys get kind of a sense of what that is. For those of you that have never heard the concept of sound healing, I'm sure you're aware that there's music you like, and when you hear it, you feel better. When you hear certain types of music, you feel worse, or you feel angry. It's all about evoking emotions, and when we have an opportunity to pull up stuck emotions, we can heal them and grow and expand. My personal quick journey, as I kept seeing an ad for the International Sound Healing Conference, and I had never heard of this healing. I'd been working in the local Columbus metaphysical community for about a good 10 years at the time and had no clue what it was talking about. And I said, okay, Spirit, if I'm supposed to go to this International Sound Healing Conference and spend $3,000 to be in Santa Fe, New Mexico at a 400-year-old garrison called La Fonda Resort, please give me a clue on what sound healing is. And when you ask, you receive. We talk about that for law of attraction and law of manifestation. And 2 days later, I went to a free class locally and was introduced to sound healing with tuning forks and some energetics, and became a certified sound healer with them, and got lost, ended up in a drum circle, fell in love with my passion, and that really launched my personal self-growth and deepened my connection to intuition and source and my psychic abilities. And from that, I developed my own personal modality when I do work on people, and I'm available either by phone or locally in Columbus or for psychic sound group sessions when I travel. I developed something called sound ascension. And to describe that to you, sound and vibration and frequency, they're all the keys to unlock doorways. So you're going to learn a little bit how to unlock your sound beingness today, and your divine intuition will grow using basic sound ascension techniques, help you to gain insight for your life path direction, and ignite your passion and purpose for increased prosperity. When I work with individuals, one of the amazing side effects is they actually get more abundance or more of what they're asking for, because that stuck energy that was sitting in your energetic field that is blocking your connection, your extreme deep connection to higher self and your physical body, is eliminated. So that layer is called the gook layer. So you go into a space and people are angry and their gook sticks to your energy field. So you can use sound to clear it just by humming and you know, clearing that energy as well. So I wanted to give you a brief my perception of sound, and we've got, I believe, is Mike on the line with us already?
I am on the line, Heather.
Yay, great. Well, hello, audience. This is Mike Cohen, again, of Curtin, and, you know, so that's my perception and my personal growth and journey with sound, and it has made me such an expanded being. I can't even explain how much growth I've experienced from working with this energy. And I'm not a classically trained musician. I have teeny hands. I can't play the piano. I can't play the guitar. But I can certainly play the drums, and I can certainly sing and make some noise. So, you know, Mike, why don't you, you know, introduce yourself first and foremost, and then share your understanding and thoughts about sound as a healing tool and so on.
Yes, certainly. Well, first of all, I'd say it's great to be here with you today, Heather. And I was a professional saxophonist throughout my teens and 20s, so I was very drawn to sound. And And at a certain point, I got tired of being on the road. I'd done all sorts of interesting things as a musician, played it with some of the top jazz bands at Eastman School of Music, and I had lived in Boston and done some touring, and then I went on the road with a African-American singer for about 4 years named Jane Powell, who was Entertainer of the Year in the college circuit. And we did R&B and funk and jazz and all kinds of really cool stuff. And I had taken some time off to study with a famous teacher with a National Endowment of the Arts grant. And I got to a point in 1993 where I just realized it wasn't doing it for me anymore, which was a little bit odd because I had really organized much of my life around music. And I had a lot of other interests. So I took about a 6-year hiatus. And when I look back over that period of time where I wasn't playing saxophone, wasn't doing any music, the only thing I ever did was sang and played some piano, but kind of shy about it. And I was kind of hidden away. Like if I get on a piano alone somewhere in someone's house, I certainly wouldn't sing with anyone around because I had been in this band and a number of bands, and they pronounced to me that you're a terrible singer and you can't sing. Right.
That's really because I also was told I could not sing, and so I ended up auditioning for a theme park my freshman year of college. I was a professional lead dancer with Ballet Met's Jazz Company and Otterbein's Dance Company, and I had laryngitis when I auditioned. And they put me in the singing show, which let me know that really they didn't care about me. They just needed to fill a space because they didn't hear me sing. I could hardly talk at the audition. And but the benefit of that, and I don't mean to step on what you're going to say, but I came out of that 3 months being able to sing because I had to sing 5 shows a day, you know, 5 times, 5 days in a row. And you can develop that instrument, and I now do sound healing and hit notes that make people literally cry as I let energy come through me. So I don't know if your experience is kind of similar. As you start to build your confidence and you exercise that muscle, that instrument, you can do anything you put your mind to. I want the audience to know that those people that are saying that, if it's your passion or your interest, you know, push through it because you can do it. So, yeah, share what's next. Sorry, Mike, I had to say that.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's a common experience, I think, that a lot of people have of being negatively assessed or judged or misunderstood around their voice and their singing. I think it really shuts folks down, you know. So It was in 2000 when I went to my first yoga class and discovered kirtan, and I absolutely fell in love with it. And I thought, wow, this is everything I love about music and none of what I was tired of. It just seemed like it was very pure and beautiful. I was chanting these mantras, very simple melodies, but it was really about the energy. And it was an invitation for everyone to sing. And at first I had my own inner resistance to that. Like, is this okay? And, you know, part of the problem is, you know, playing at music school, you know, a conservatory and being on the road, you're constantly assessed all the time. Are you good? Are you bad? Are you better than this person? Are you worse than this person? All this is going on, this tremendous inner critic that gets going in many of the arts, but it's especially music and especially singing because it's so intimate and personal. So I was bumping up against a lot of that when I first started, and then I just got to a point where I was like, you know, this feels good and I love this, and I don't care, and I'm just going to develop. And you know, it was very, very soon, that very quick, that I was able to developed because I had all this musical history, but it gave me some appreciation for the kinds of things that people that show up to my kirtan events might be experiencing, the kinds of stories they may have running in their head. So I'll let you comment on that, but I have a few more things that I could share on this topic.
Well, exactly. And, you know, I think that is one of the intentions that I've learned to do when I gather people together, is to create that safe space of non-judgment. I set that intention with the radio show. So, you know, for callers, you can call into our show at 646-595-3440. And we do talk about anything, announce what you're into, announce an event, ask for a mini abundance reading, or share your perception and thoughts and stories about sound today. Because this is a safe place. You don't have to agree with us. and we will honor your opinion as long as you're respectful and honor ours and others. So I think being in the yoga studio where it's like an understood intention of safety really can create that dropping our own self-judgments and expressing that. And you just gather with safe people and you just do your light. And I know that for myself, because very early on I learned to be persecuted for being good at something, which was a real shocker that existed, being such a gifted dancer so quickly, and then going into a space, high school, where other people didn't have that focus of excellence, and to be persecuted for being better than them and not realizing I was told you have to be perfect, you have to do it right, and then other people judging you and saying you're terrible because you're good. And I think we get that a lot in society. So, you know, what you're doing with your music and the energy and the intention of it, even if somebody's just listening on their own, you're empowering them to their own potential.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of mischief that goes around with assessments and performance, and especially when it comes to singing and dancing. What I found with kirtans, I just loved it. Very innocently, we started having these kirtan house parties. And this is, you know, way back in the day before there was anything. And I moved to Columbus, as you know, in 2003, and started missing the kirtan that I'd been doing in Yellow Springs, Ohio, where I've been living, and started inviting the folks up to come and play in Columbus. And we did a little bit here and there, and it kind of fell apart. And then in 2006, I just found I was really missing it and decided to start beating kirtan and building a scene in Columbus, which I did, and then went out touring. And now there's all sorts of things going on in the kirtan world. They have a couple of albums and videos, and people are, you know, playing at these big festivals like Bhakti Fest. So it's gotten really big. But, you know, the thing is that oftentimes, since we're talking about sound healing, you know, just this particular dimension of it, oftentimes I might just show up in a yoga studio, maybe even unexpectedly. And this is in Michigan, Ohio, Indiana, you know, all these kind of quote-unquote Bible Belt, you know, part of the country. And folks look at me sometimes like, oh, my God, what is this guy doing here? What are we going to have to do? What is going on? I can just feel the fear. I mean, I can look out and I can feel the anxiety and the fear that people have. So part of what I've learned over the years is ways to talk about what kirtan is and ways to work with them to make it okay and make a safe, supportive space. And, you know, all sorts of things happen. You know, people come up afterwards and they go, oh, my God, I've never done that before. What was that? I have no idea. I had all these feelings. I started crying. Whatever, you know. And, you know, I can sort of see them melt. You know, they're looking at me as I'm talking. I feel the anxiety. Talking a little bit more, I can see them sort of softening. You know, we do a little chant of Om, and I can see that, you know, halfway through they start chanting and everyone's doing it. And then I can see people kind of relaxing and feel the energy smooth out. And so it's like I know something really good is happening, and I know that perhaps that experience is bumping up against some story from the past and, you know, creating some healing.
Exactly. And I think, you know, as we become more attuned to our personal intuition and awareness, I've learned to be very compassionate in situations like Universal Light Expo or even on the street when I'm speaking about it, and read the signs and help guide the person to just planting the seed and supporting their awakening and not judging if they don't completely grasp everything I'm trying to share, because that's not where they're at in the moment. And I spent a lot of time as a salesperson, like, throwing stuff in people's faces, and, you know, part of that maturity helps you kind of soften. I know when I first met you was around 2006, when I just started sound healing, and I didn't know what was going on with my voice. I didn't know what was awakening to me. Spirit knew. I didn't have a clue. I just sat as a witness, and I remember coming out and being like, hey, I can hit this note. I don't know what this means, and you kind of looked at me funny, and you're like, okay, nice note, and, you know, but it was, that's nice, but it was, you know, it was part of that, you know, me practicing, staying in front of somebody and saying, I can sing. Now, I do karaoke all the time, and people tell me I'm good now. And I have been doing it for a good, you know, ninety-one was when I was in the theme park, and I started doing karaoke about 6-7 years later, and now I do at least once a week to, you know, exercise that instrument and be the star on stage. But, you know, it really, that's, I feel like my, one of my divine purposes is when I speak or when I tone that I'm sending love and healing. And if I'm doing it in a bar at karaoke, I'm changing the vibration of that room. And that's powerful. And people will get triggered and they can't stand the notes. Have you ever had a situation where you've gone somewhere and maybe people are repelled by the music or the energy of it? Has that ever happened to you?
I haven't heard that at Pearson. You know, I think maybe people are repelled by the idea of it. I think the experience of it, you know, I think sometimes it can be overwhelming for people. They might feel too much emotion or some energy moving or not understand why they're feeling these sensations, because there's a lot of, you know, a lot of things when we do kirtan, we drop into our body. You know, I mean, one way of looking at things is, from a certain perspective as I see it, most of the time people are walking around and we're really in our heads and our hearts are shut down and we're dissociated from our bodies. And that's kind of how normal life is. And then we come into some experience. It could be body work. It could be yoga. It could be a sound healing session. It could be kirtan. And we start engaging in the practice. And all of a sudden, we start to feel ourselves dropping into our body and getting connected with our body. And when we do that, all of a sudden, our minds soften and become open and receptive. And then our hearts are able to open and extend. And so a lot of people, that's a very new experience. And when that happens, they could feel a lot of things. They could feel any emotion. They could feel joy. They could feel gratitude. They could feel grief. They could feel sadness. They could feel anxiety. I mean, there's so many things that that they could feel in their body, and they could feel a lot of sensations. They could feel energy rushing up or energy rushing down or something pulsing, or they might feel warmer or they might feel more open. And, you know, that can be a lot for people. But generally, I think it's more with kirtan, folks have resistance to the idea. I haven't really seen people have resistance to the experience of it.
Yes, that makes complete sense. I know that, you know, one of the core messages I got in the modality that I've been given, completely just downloaded, was that it kind of unlocks the doorways. So it unlocks the doorways to emotion to express what we're experiencing, and like you said, it can be overwhelming. I sing through my drum some of the time because I love how it's a Native American round drum, and I love how it echoes and creates this like really cool vibration. And I have a friend that, you know, I'm just like, oh, I'll just start hitting a note and she'll just bust out in tears. And you know, there's something buried that the vibration or that frequency is awakening and triggering release, and that's powerful. Regular, you know, any kind of music does that to us. It evokes emotion. So I think it's important that we have some type of sound and expression in our lives, musical homes. I was watching Ellen the other day. Nicole Kidman's married to Keith Urban. She's got two little girls, and she said it's so cool being married to a musician, because there's music in our house all day long. And this sense of joy and playfulness is exuded in the environment. And, you know, that really helps offer comfort to me personally, and I'm sure to many others. So much power in it. Tell me a little bit, share a little bit about maybe if the kind of history of kirtan, where did it kind of come from, and why is it starting to become more widely accepted, do you think?
Yeah, sure. You know, part of this relates to the point that you just made about people loving music. So I'll share a few things, and I'll share why I think it's becoming more popular, which pertains to your point. So here's a way of thinking about kirtan. In India, up until the 1500s, there were these sacred mantras. And these mantras had been around for certainly hundreds, maybe thousands of years. And these mantras had very serious spiritual potency and energetic potency to them. Let's just put it that way. In a way, a mantra, a Sanskrit word, is different than an English word in the sense that many English words were pointing to things that already exist. We're going, oh, there's a laptop computer, there's a mason jar full of water, you know, there's a piece of paper. We're pointing to things out there. When we do a Sanskrit mantra, we're doing Om Namah Shivaya. Om is the universal sound. Namah means I'm calling on the energy of, so it's claiming an intention to receive the energy. And Shivaya is Shiva. And rather than pointing out in the world, there's a way that those words point in through our hearts to the heart of the divine. So they're really a portal or an energy channel to Shiva, to that energy. So these mantras were really unavailable. So we recently had the Occupy movement, which was talking about the 1% and the 99%. So we could imagine that these mantras were the property of the 1% and they were not available to the 99%. And some radical, democratic-oriented folks in India said, hey, this isn't right. And so they took these mantras and they brought them to everybody, to the 99%. Now, the way they did that is they ingeniously blended it with music, and they blended it with the folk music that was around at the time. So what blossomed was this incredible bhakti movement, and bhakti means devotion or joy or gratitude. So there's this whole movement of in the 1500s in India, where there was just this blossoming of this practice and the proliferation throughout the society, so that so many more people were participating in these spiritual practices compared to previously. Now, kirtan came to the West, you could say, maybe with the Hare Krishnas or George Harrison, the Beatles in the 60s, and I think it kind of went underground and was, you know, for the most part in ashrams. And through the 70s and maybe the 80s, and I think by the 90s, you had folks like Krishan Das and, of course, Jai Tal and Bhagavan Das and other folks were getting out, Wah and many others, Dave Stringer, in the 90s were getting out and about and sort of taking it out of the ashrams and bringing it into the yoga studios. And as yoga has grown in popularity, kirtan has grown as well. So why... The second part of the question is, why do I think it is that people, that it's growing in popularity now? So I think that on the one hand, it's growing in popularity because it's really trailing along the yoga movement, which is now a $1 billion industry. So yoga has become incredibly popular. And kirtan and mantra music is really the soundtrack to the yoga world. But I think there's something much deeper going on, which is that kirtan is a phenomenal practice for healing, like we've been talking about, but also it's a phenomenal practice because when someone comes to a kirtan event, there's a band and there's the audience, and the audience sings. So kirtan blurs the distinction between the band and the audience. So the fact that it's participatory, people really like that. Also, I think there's a way that we as humans are hardwired to dance and sing and drum tribally with our community, so it's an opportunity for that. But beyond
absolutely
that, my sense is that we live very individualistic lives. So you have your life, and you know someone drives to their office and sits at their cubicle and looks at their computer and talks on their phone, and then they come home to their home where they live alone or maybe with one other person. We're just not doing things together. And one of the really amazing things about kirtan is that it's a communal practice. So we co-create the experience together. So you show up and everybody else shows up and every person is helping create the experience and also impacting it. So you sing a high note or you sing a harmony or you start clapping and that impacts other people. So there's a way that we're creating something together. And I think that we really are lacking that in our lives these days. And that's one of the reasons why kirtan is so popular.
I love that explanation, and it's interesting to me, the story of the mantras is basically identical to the story of the ancient solfeggio tones, and it might be the same story, where David Holst did research because he came from a very strict religious background and started preaching when he was like 15 years old in the South and traveling and doing the tent preaching, and I think it's called Pentecostal or whatever. And when he was doing his research, he discovered that there were these six ancient frequencies, all adding up to 3, 6, and 9, called the ancient solfeggio, which allowed them to have an open-ended scale. Unlike a C to C scale is a closed-ended scale. The notes have a finality versus the frequencies that are in the solfeggio notes. And King James, I think, is the same thing in the 1500s, 16th century. The monks would chant probably the mantras you're talking about in the frequencies of the solfeggio. And the congregation would spontaneously start healing. And the more the people were able to be healed and connected and whole and empowered, the worse it was for the monarchy, right? They couldn't dominate or dictate when their population at that time was happy. So he made it illegal for the monks to use those frequencies. So it's fascinating to me. That similar thing. I'm sure it's the same story, different, you know, information with same notes and tones and frequencies. And I think we are an enlightened society. We had the 2012 and all the funness with the Mayan calendar, and a lot of shedding happened for me and people that are aware, and a lot of shedding happened to people that were unaware last year. So they're still in kind of a state of confusion of the bodies they sit in. What is this physical vessel that I'm in, and why am I more aware of what's going on around me? It scares me. I don't know how to cope with it. And so music is a real soothing way to offer comfort and inspiration and balance back into their existence. So, yeah, cool stuff. What else? Why don't you share a little bit about, you know, your traveling? You started in Columbus, and I love international travel. I'm looking forward to doing a lot of that with my nonprofit. So why don't you give us an inside glimpse into how curtain is received in other cultures and other communities or other countries? I think that would be interesting.
Yeah, well, you know, Kirtan is growing in popularity around the world. It's still a tiny, tiny little itsy-bitsy niche. Here in America, it's about 4 or 5 years ago, there was a festival that started that was called Bhakti Fest. And I played there for several years. They've now expanded in California, they've now expanded to the Midwest. So we have Bhakti Fest Midwest, which is happening in Madison, Wisconsin, July 5th through 7th, and I'll be there. So, you know, even these Bhakti Fests, which are the quote-unquote the spiritual Woodstock, you know, are only, you know, 3,000-4,000 people. So even within the West, it's very, very small. You know, I've traveled a bunch to India a number of times, and to Costa Rica and Hawaii and Canada and all over North America. And, you know, it's the same story everywhere. There's a group of people that are excited about it. There's a lot of people that don't know. And, you know, I have some friends. Dave Stringer spends a lot of time in Europe, and he spent a lot of time in Australia, where apparently kirtan is getting very, very popular. So I think, you know, it's definitely growing. It's been really fun. You know, when I started in 2006, the only reason why I did it is just because I missed doing it, and I realized nobody else was going to do it, so I might as well in Columbus. And
yeah,
you know, I never sort of thought, oh, this is a good career opportunity or anything like that, you know, but it kind of took over my life in many ways, and, you know, it was really my passion. So it's been amazing how it sort of opened up doors and what's happened. I have a story I wanted to share relating to prosperity and sound healing from India, because any like international travel, I went to India several times, and one of the times I went to India, the work that I do when I'm not doing kirtan is leadership coaching, and I had a job with a corporation. It was kind of perfect because it was right when I went on the road, and it was all internet and phone coaching, and so I could do it anywhere. So I was like, okay, this is great. I've got my first album, and I'm going to go on the road, and I'm going to tour absolutely as much as I can all over North America and wherever it takes me. And as long as I've got Skype in a telephone. I can do this coaching job, and that's going to pay all the bills, and, you know, great. So I went and did that, and I did that job for about a year and a half, and it was for a company that what we were doing was in the middle of the financial crisis, and there was, like, hundreds of thousands of jobs being lost every month. You know, the economy was basically in free fall. This is the end of 2008, early 2009. So my job was to work with these folks who'd been laid off by these major corporations and get them sort of squared away and ready to get back in the job market and support them in any way I can. So it was a fascinating experience because I was simultaneously spending, you know, 20, 30 hours a week with folks who were oftentimes very angry and close to depression, you know, because they just lost their job and things look so bleak. And also doing this amazing uplifting kirtan, you know, all over the place. It's really
what a
great
dynamic. What a, like, the extremes of life.
Yes. Wild extremes. So there I am, and in the spiritual nature that I am, that I'm in, it was, you know, recommended. And what I did was I would go every year to India for Guru Purnima, which is sometime in July. It moves around, you know. So I was planning on going, and I got a call from my boss. Now, the layoffs were dropping. Our company was laying off people, but they had these quality scores and blah, blah, blah. And I was fine. Well, anyhow, at one point, they just basically cut the whole team back to the original number. I think we started at 20 and we went up to 65. We came back to 20. So bottom line is I got laid off, right? So I went through the whole experience that I'd been, you know, coaching others through, being depressed and frustrated and hurt and angry, and, you know, my pride was wounded and all sorts of things. And then I realized, wait a minute, this is fantastic because I'm going to go to India. And now instead of going over there for like a 9 or 10 day trip, just zipping over and coming back because of my job, I was like, I can go and travel, you know? So, So I went and I could tell about, talk for about an hour about the whole experience in India. But the one thing I want to say is that my teacher was instructing me on where to go. And he said, go to a town called Tirumala, and there is a famous temple there. It's the most famous temple in all of southern India called Tirupati. So he says, go to Tirupati. So, Tirupati is the town, Tirumala is the temple. So I went, this friend of mine, we were in Bangalore, and we took a train through the night, and we woke up and we were there, and we were the only people with white skin we saw for days, you know. And anyhow, the way it works is the temple is up on the top of a mountain, and it's a 3-hour walk up. And I would see Indians and pilgrims walking barefoot, carrying kids. We, of course, took a cab, right, a shortcut. So we get up to the top, and then once you get in line, it's a 3-hour wait until you see the actual temple, the deity. But the thing is that the deity that's in there is called Venkateshwar, also known as Balaji. And Balaji has two wives. One is named Bhudevi, and one's named Lakshmi. Lakshmi, is, I'm sure you know, is the goddess of prosperity. So if he decides he wants to marry Lakshmi, but there's a problem. Lakshmi wants a really big wedding. That's how this myth goes. And so where's he going to get the money for the wedding? So he borrows the money from Lakshmi's brother to pay for the big wedding. So this is all great. He gets married to Lakshmi. Now he owes Lakshmi's brother all this money. So the way the myth goes in India is that you can go up to this deity and you can make your wish. You can say, hey, here's what I want. You can make a deal. You could say, I want this to happen, and if it does, I'll pay you 20% of my profit or whatever, however it goes, right? So this is the temple of prosperity. And in Indian, I mean, it's like on a regular day, there's 60,000 people going through there. And on a major holiday, there could be 1 million people there. And it takes 3 hours to get through the line, and people are pushing, and they're all excited, yelling, Govindas, Govindas. They're super excited. And it's just a phenomenal. The energy up there was phenomenal. It was amazing. And then you get all the way up there after, you know, maybe 3 hours walking up the hill if you don't take a cab. 3 hours going through line, you're in front of the deity for about 10 seconds, but the energy is so powerful. And you have to state your intention right there. You have to make your wish, make your deal. And it's one of the most wealthy temples in the entire world because people make their deals, they turn out, and then they pay.
Wow. I can't wait to do more traveling. That's all I have to say.
Well, I'll tell you one thing, is that that's a phenomenal temple. And the very first temple, Hindu temple, built in the U.S. was a replica of it, and it's in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. So if you feel like taking a road trip one day, it's a phenomenal place to go visit. And the energy in Pittsburgh is amazing as well. It's called the SV Temple in Pittsburgh.
Would you post that on our face, on our fan page, on so that people have an opportunity to, you know, search that or Google that or whatever, and myself included, because, you know,
sure.
That's the kind of fun part about Facebook is using the fan pages to help people, you know, get an opportunity to connect with each other. And I know from working in the metaphysical, I have no fear when, and I don't know if you do this, but let's say I know I'm going to travel to a city or a location for something. I'm always going on meetup.com or Facebook and reaching out and saying, hey, I'm in the area. Do you know anybody that would help host like an event and all kinds of fun stuff like that? So I've met some amazing people just from having the courage to reach out. I don't see barriers. I see the internet as a big, giant connection to all of us. It's just an easy way to do it.
Sure, I'd be happy to. I'll be happy to post that information. I haven't been there in years, but I went a number of times. My spiritual teacher took me there, and I went several times with him, and a couple of times I brought some people there myself. And if you're energetically aware, someone like yourself, you'll really enjoy being there. It's very beautiful.
I love being awake now and traveling versus remembering how it was to travel before. Always having some sort of sense but not focusing on it. Now it seems that anywhere I go, even if it's just a field somewhere outside the city or up the, you know, even High Banks Park and walking, how amazing the pulse of nature and the energy of life is. It's just an incredible, incredible state of awareness that I'm so grateful for. And I know because I'm such a mental person and because I do so many things and I have so many ideas and my mind spins and it's its own little like spazzy vibration, that sound is, if I hadn't gotten lost and ended up in that drum circle, I would not have the capacity at that time to learn how to meditate. Because also at that sound healing conference, we did something called trance dance with a PhD gentleman. I forget his name right now, but, you know, he does shamanic work and the drumming and the soul retrieval and the tapping of the chest as the drum beat and the heartbeat. And, you know, it was the first time it forced me to dance with 200 people in the ballroom, all of us blindfolded, to rhythms and music, and to the rhythm beats, the music that he had composed. And you can't rip off the blindfold. So you have to step outside your ego and look within. And so this combination of the drumming, the curtain, the swaying, the singing, the chanting, it's a full body sensory experience that we don't always have an opportunity to do as we walk through life. So it's a definite breather from reality.
Yeah. Well, I'll share with you, someone who likes mental models and articulating perspectives. So I'll share with you something that my teacher, Philip Lippitz, who actually is in Columbus, grew up there and went all over the world and then came back, and I met him. Because I was there, he ended up moving back. But he's traveling a lot these days, teaching. He's in Europe right now and in California a lot. He helped me conceptualize and operationalize a new way of looking at kirtan rather than a bhakti approach, a Dattatreya approach. And just a little piece of it that I want to share with you is that there's a way of looking at kirtan is sort of arising in a number of different dimensions at the same time. So I think one of the conceits that we have in our mental society is that we think we can isolate something, or we think that we can say causation exists over here, when actually causation is arising in multiple areas at the same time. So part of what he was sharing with me is that there's an individual aspect. And so when we're doing kirtan, there's a healing aspect. So it might be that I was shamed or judged or assessed myself as being unable to sing, and I come to kirtan and I have an experience and I go, wow, and I walk out of there and some sort of healing has occurred. You know, it could be around that, or it could be around something else. It could be that I had a difficult experience that day, or something went on with my family, and I was able to kind of let that energy move through. So there's an individual healing aspect. There's also an individual archetypal aspect, in the sense of, you know, one of the most popular deities in kirtan is Ganesh. Ganesh is the remover of obstacles. And so a lot of times at my kirtanants will use that chant, a mantra to Ganesh, to set an intention and invoke the removal of some obstacle that's showing up in our life. And so there's a way that on a personal level, kirtan is archetypal in that way. It has something to do with energies or things that we experience in the world. It has something to do with healing that's going on within us. And it also has something to do with, you know, us just being present with who we are. So it's like when we really slow down, like you're saying, we start noticing, wow, I'm really connected to my body. I'm really present. My heart's opening. My head's slowing down. What's going on in my experience? Rather than looking out in the world, we start, like you're saying, looking in to our inner experience. That's one whole sort of worldly individual dimension. One of the other dimensions he pointed out to me, and there's four, and I won't go into all of them, I'll just go into the two, is the collective. And the collective is when we get a bunch of people together, what happens? One of the amazing things about kirtan and these kinds of sound healing experiences you're talking about is that we're actually doing something with other people. We're not on our own, you know? And there's a way in which who we are or aspects of who we are show up when we're around other people rather than being individual. And that can be very healing, you know? And there's a way that we're just wired to be with our tribe and to dance and to chant and to make music and to drum. It's just, I think, wired into what it means to be a human. And then we're doing something together. We're co-creating the experience. So part of what he shared with me is there are these four different dimensions, and I'm just pointing to two of them, and those are the two that, you know, when we talk about what is sound healing, it's all these things at the same time.
Well, and I think you brought up some really good points that I've learned over time, and it's giving yourself permission to be your sound beingness. And I use that phrasing because we weren't meant to be quiet, but we're socialized to be quiet. Little babies, stop crying. Little, you know, animals, cats. I have pets. You know, two dogs and three cats. And when they're hurt, they purr, and that's their own self healing and vibration. And other types of animals do a similar activity of self healing using vibration and sound. And humans do the same thing, especially babies. But we tell them always, be quiet, don't talk. You know, kids should be seen, not heard. And it really squelches us. And then we grow up to be adults, and sometimes we don't learn to speak up for ourselves. So when I'm doing clearings on people, let's say what I call a quick tune-up, where they're just sitting in the chair and I'm just activating or clearing their energy chakras, 80% of the time people have a block in the back of their throat, which is their throat chakra. They're speaking their authentic truth. And in the back of their heart, because my intuition, that's where the chakras start. So you open the back, and then that allows the energy to pull through the front. And it's fascinating how often, and I can tell them from channeling and being clairaudient now because of sound, that I said, where in your life are you not speaking up for yourself? Oh, yeah, work. Oh, yeah, relationship. Well, your throat chakra's blocked. Let's clear it. Now speak your truth. What do you want that person to know? What do you want to say? Because you're really speaking to yourself. And so I get to do these little mini quickies all day long at festivals and events, and I get to really see people in their internal participating with me and experiencing the activity around them at the same time. It's exactly as you described it, and it's fun to observe and watch and participate in that, and really being able to go in internally and have that safe exploration and be in a group. I know from You know, I've done a lot of self-discovery and holistic coaching classes, and I love the group experience much more than just me and one other person where they're the facilitator, because we all have the same issues. So if everybody comes into your room and the yoga studio and they're in Curtin and every single person's got a different issue that they're struggling with that they want to heal, it heals that issue on a subconscious energetic level for the other people in the room. Have you had anybody share those kind of stories with you after their experience with Curtin?
Well, you know, I think actually what you're pointing to reminds me more of what I experience in my group coaching programs that I do. What I've been, since I've sort of come off the road, I'm traveling a little bit less frequently. I've been doing a lot more workshops with things like the Enneagram, and I have a program called Life 2.0, which is a 9-month group coaching program, and many workshops, and also Kirtan workshops. And one of the things I noticed is that when we get into a group, people start acting differently than if it's one-on-one. All of a sudden, there's a big concern about safety and belonging. You know, everyone's looking at the leader and wondering in the back of their mind, am I safe here? Do I belong? Am I going to be shamed? Am I going to be hurt? You know, and once that concern is taken care of, then a lot of times people get competitive, you know. Ooh, am I winning? Am I losing? How am I doing? Am I up? Am I down?
True.
Am I better than her? Am I worse than him? What's going on here?
Did I cry
right?
loud enough?
Yeah. Did I do it right? You know. So part of what my intention as a group facilitator is, in leading these events, these workshops and these coaching programs, is to help people soften and relax and drop that enough that they can show up in a way that creates honesty and intimacy and authenticity. I think there's a whole level of healing that can happen there, but it only really starts happening in the social situation once people feel comfortable and confident enough, you know. So I actually had an interesting experience this fall where I was teaching a series of introductory Enneagram workshops, and most of them were public programs through a yoga studio where, you know, we put it out there to the world and people would choose to show up and pay and they'd participate. It was great. And there's a level of depth we were getting to. Then I did a program like that, and it was similar, except it was in a therapist office, and the therapist decided that since enrollment was low, they would get all their staff and everybody on their team that worked in that office to take the program as well. And what was fascinating was I realized, wondering myself, why aren't we going deep? Why isn't anyone speaking? Why aren't we getting honesty? Why is there such a lack of authenticity? And I realized halfway through, it's like, oh, we're in an office situation. There's politics going on. People aren't really willing to be honest and authentic and intimate because they have to work with each other. And there's a level of competitiveness that's present that they're really attending to. And so it was fascinating for me. It just made me realize how much as humans, how challenging and how difficult it is actually to feel safe enough to drop the competitiveness and actually be, you know, honest and intimate and authentic.
And I think a lot of times because we don't get an opportunity to be truly heard when we share, that also is kind of the, you know, you instantly revert to the kindergartner that's got their hand up like, me, I want to speak. And, you know, it's a great observation for the facilitator, from my opinion, because then people are participating. They're comfortable, and you just have to figure out a way to be compassionate and honor that individual and also honor the other people that you can intuitively know are a little more hesitant to share, but have something to say. It's a fun little balance.
Certainly.
So talk a little bit more about your coaching, how people can, you know, get to you for the coaching and what they can expect from that type of work that you're doing, because I know that's different than Kirtin, even though it's all connected.
Sure. Well, it's a little complicated, all the things I'm up to, but what I'll share it like this. I have three groups of things I do. So one is Kirtan. So I do these call and response chant events. And I have a fun workshop called Practical Kirtan, where I teach people about the different deities and mantras, and actually have people, if they choose, get up and play the harmonium and be supported by me and guided and directed to lead the entire group in a chant, which is quite fun. It's quite amazing to see people feeling like they can't do that, and then I bring them up there and they do it, and just seeing how they feel with the energy and looking around at everyone else, it's amazing, you know. And Kirtan CDs and appearances at festivals and conferences and videos. So that's one bucket. Another bucket I've been doing for a dozen years is leadership coaching. So I do one-on-one sessions. I do a particular form of body work that's tied into the leadership work I do, which is called somatic body work. I've been teaching a lot of Enneagram workshops. Enneagram is a...
Somatic body work is really taking on a, I don't know the right word right now, but it's picking up momentum. Do you feel that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that we're, as a culture, kind of evolving to the point, I guess I could say that, you know, it used to all be about what are you thinking, what's your mind doing, and our body was all about transporting our mind around, and then sometime, I guess, in the 90s, through Daniel Goleman and other folks at Harvard, you know, organizations and corporations realized that, oh, my God, people have emotions, and that's worth attending to. But I think that the place that they haven't really paid attention to yet has been the body, but we're really ready for that, to start understanding...
Yes.
How do it be an integrated head, heart, body, mind, and what sorts of things do we need to do? And somatics is really rooted and grounded there.
I have a good friend, Don Thompson, who is a somatic healer. And mm-hmm. I hadn't heard that term per se until, you know, this last year working with her. And then it's not like I didn't know it existed, but the awareness of it for me was an aha moment. And since I'm such a mental person and I rationalize and I've done the holistic coaching, which when I first started in 98, it would take me 2 hours a session because I had to keep using the Gestalt technique, keep asking questions and digging and peeling the layers. Basically, my goal is to get the person to cry, which made them feel, which then they could heal it. And then now having the understanding over the last, you know, 3-4 years that you just set the intention. I don't want to feel this limiting belief anymore or believe it, and it's gone. And then it's you just dissipate it versus this new awakening of where is it sitting in my cellular level? Where did I bring this into this existence, this consciousness, and where is it still rearing its head to create life lessons and attract things into my life? And I think that's a beautiful observation of our journey and evolution in these times is, you know, you got to feel it to heal it. So sound makes people get into their body. I appreciate having a facilitator that helps me get into my body because I think so much. And I'm like, you know, I called her up and I'm like, I'm having a crisis. I don't know what it is. Coach needs a coach. I'm like, I got to clear this. It's holding me back. What is it? And she got me in there and I felt it and, you know, it's not easy and it's scary because it's human existence stuff and so on. So I appreciate that you're doing that. I will absolutely help spread the word more on that because I think, well, I know that that's what is what people need to be aware of, that they can feel it, heal it, and let it go and never have to, let's say it's an abuse situation. You don't have to tell me your story of that traumatic event for you to heal it. That's old school psychology. This is new age. This is new spiritual awakening and healing. And we can get down to that stuck energy in your body and let it go. And then you're good, you know. So talk a little bit about how you walk a client through that. How do you create that safe space? And what could somebody expect from working with you on that one-on-one level?
Well, you know, actually it's funny because over the last 4 or 5 years I've given well over 1,000 of these bodywork sessions, mostly because I was touring and traveling so much, and I was in and around yoga studios, and so I would just say to them, hey, you know, why don't I just set up a table in one of your spaces and let's go to town. So, I've done a lot of these sessions, and one of the things I realized is that everyone's very unique, you know, where people are at and what's going on with their body. And sometimes, you know, when you are working with people in their bodies, you're really You know, my take is that one of the reasons why folks aren't connecting with their body is because there's a lot of things in our bodies that we aren't necessarily so pleasant to experience. Could be stored trauma, could be all sorts of emotional residue, could be things from injuries. You know, once we start really getting into our body, we start really dealing with our mortality. And, you know, there's a way that these are not things that our culture really points us towards and that maybe aren't the most fun for us to get into. So I'm always meeting people where they are, and one of my orientations is in my coaching as well as my body work is to look at, you know, what's the history and what's the pattern that's there, and how can we disorganize the pattern in a gentle way so that the body can reorganize itself around what's happening now as opposed to what was happening in the past. So because we're speaking so much about this issue of fifth chakra and voice, I'll just share that lots of folks, well, let me step back. When I was first getting this training at a place called the Strozzi Institute in California in 2006, they said something that sounded very odd to me. And they said that different people in different regions around the country were armored differently. So in other words, the armoring, the way people's bodies were shaped, was different by region. And I thought that was a very bizarre statement. But as I toured around and I gave all these different sessions, I realized, oh, there's a lot of truth to this. For whatever reason, everyone I worked on in Colorado felt like they had cement in their hips. And everyone I worked on in New York City had you know, incredibly armored shins, which makes sense because they're walking on pavement all day long, you know. Now, when I got to Indiana and Ohio and Michigan, especially Indiana and Michigan, I started noticing that people's jaws and necks were incredibly tight. So many of the people I worked on have a similar pattern in their body. Their shoulders are tense and up towards their ears. Their chin is super tight. Their jaw is super tight. Their neck is super tight. I started wondering, why would people in this region be armored that way? And I started developing some techniques to address it, but what I came to was that, especially in Indiana, Michigan, Wisconsin, Ohio, this is the Midwest, and people are supposed to be very sweet. And now most of my clientele, because it's through a yoga studio, tends to be women. So what I started realizing as I was exploring this more and inquiry about it and talking to folks is that, you know, these are folks who were, you know, it was very important for them to stay safe and belong in their social environment. It was very important for them to be seen as being nice or sweet, which meant not speaking their truth, not speaking out if they're angry, not speaking out if they're upset, not asking for what they needed. And so the brilliant way that their bodies were able to accomplish this was to sort of collapse down around the fifth chakra and really tighten everything down so that it would push any energy or any words that wanted to be spoken, that wanted to come up and out, would push it back down and in. Now, what's amazing is kirtan is such an up-and-out practice that it really counteracts that whole movement. But people's bodies are literally armored in a way that makes it really hard. So it really hard for someone to speak their truth. So, you know, that's just one thing that I see showing up as a pattern, and there's a lot of different techniques for disorganizing the armoring in those areas of the body that I've been taught or I've experimented with. You know, it really can open up a lot if you can get folks feeling safe and strong and empowered enough to speak their truth.
I love that. Yeah, I think, you know, there's so many beautiful, positive opportunities for people to pick themselves up. And I think the more we can, you know, plant that seed of light and inspire and offer that safe venue, and give people, get them to question themselves. Like, you know, I had a really good teacher that I worked with, and she was a body worker, but she called, her business was unraveling. And she took pride in the fact she could trigger the crap out of somebody and take them to the deep edge of being comfortable or uncomfortable, really. And people didn't like her for it because it was, like you said, body memory and issues and stuck patterns that we don't like to look at. We want to feel like we're okay and we're perfect and we're fine. And And that's a myth, that's a fantasy or, you know, that we create when, you know, it's okay to be sad, angry, and feel bad. And I had to teach myself to cry. And the only emotions I knew growing up were anger and I don't even know if it was happiness per se, but these two dynamics I didn't know how to express. And I was probably a really sad, well, I know I was a sad kid that just kind of floated in red until I found dancing and I had books and science, but, you know, my parents didn't know how to express emotion. And so now, you know, yesterday I was like, man, I feel like crying. And my friend's like, don't cry. I'm like, no, I need to cry. I need to let it out. I'm not going to hold on to this. This doesn't serve me. I'm just expressing emotion. And that's okay.
Yeah.
So
that's
nice
such a cultural thing. Don't cry. Push it back in. Well, then that energy gets stuck in your body. Now you're carrying it around, and it causes some armoring in your body. And, you know, it's just, and we're off and running. So part of what I'm doing in coaching is actually hands-on. Some of it is movement. There are different Aikido-based practices that I do in my group coaching. I had a blast this last year. I launched this Life 2.0 group coaching program, and we had a dozen folks in the group. It was a pilot. We met for 7 months, and one of the things I taught them was a practice that uses a martial arts staff called a Jo. And again, I learned this out at Strozzi Institute, and it's just six moves. But we can do the six moves individually. We can do the six moves in a whole group, and we can also do the six moves in partners where the sticks actually touch. They actually kind of whack each other. And we can actually do it, the six moves in a whole group where everyone's sticks are touching. And it was just fascinating and fabulous because it has so much to do with How are we being centered? How are we moving from center? Are we grounded? Are we extended? Are we overextended? Are we balanced? How do we move with others? How do we stay in relationship with others? And all these different levels of this practice, and they loved it. They absolutely loved it. So I was fortunate to be trained at this school called the Strozzi Institute, where we were taught coaching, speaking, conversational, but also body movements and practicing making movements with our body, and also hands-on body work and how they're all relevant for achieving what we're most committed to in our life. So when I do one-on-one sessions with folks, sometimes it's one of those three parts, talking or moving or hands-on, and sometimes it's two or all three at the same time. When I do this group coaching program, which we're getting ready to relaunch here in March, when I do this group coaching program, we are working a lot with conversation and a lot with power. So again, this fifth chakra issue, it's very difficult to create the kind of life you want if you're not willing to own and speak your truth. And so part of what we're doing is we're working with an understanding of that, but also building an embodiment of how do you do that. I'm always very interested in not what do we need to do, but how do we do it. So there's all sorts of practices that we work in conversation that help us become more powerfully aligned with what we care about most.
Absolutely. Well, it looks like we've got about 10 more minutes to the show, and I wanted you to let people know how they can get access to your albums and your music. I'm going to see if I can upload a song that we can play a little bit of. I've got the clips on our Facebook fan page for Entrepreneurial Excellence, and I believe it's michaelcohenkirtan.com is your website. But let everybody know about, I don't know if we've had a chance to actually speak about your albums and your you know, how people can get in touch with that. And then definitely I posted your Cincinnati event. I'm going to post the April event on our fan page. But let people know about that as well.
Certainly. Well, I'll let folks know, depending on how far and wide your listenership is. We're going to be playing February 8th in Chicago, March 16th in Cincinnati at Yoga Home in Oakley. We've got a date, 99%, Detroit, April 27th, Oktoberfest Midwest, July 5th, a whole lot of other dates coming on soon in Michigan, Ohio, Indiana, Illinois. And looks like we're going to be back at Yoga on High on August 24th, about 99% settled on that date. So
okay.
that's great. If folks want to find out more about me or what I'm up to or purchase albums, my website is MikeCohenKirtan.com. So that's Mike, C-O-H-E-N, Kirtan, K-I-R-T-A-N.com. I got a bunch of videos on YouTube, I'm on Facebook. And if people want to purchase my albums, they're available through the website and also on iTunes, Spotify, everything, all the online distributorships.
Well, go in and underneath the post that I've got on running for about the show right now, and then what
mm-hmm.
happens at the end of the show, I'll get another link, and that's the link people can go back and download, and I'll post
mm-hmm.
that and I'll share it. And go ahead in the comments, make as many comments as you want, and put those links to your website, the download, so it's all in like one spot for people, so that we can
mm-hmm.
keep that conversation going. And then I have your, I downloaded the albums yesterday, and I put the background of one of your songs in the video promo I made. And
mm-hmm.
so looks like I've got, I'm going to say these wrong, but I'm going to do my best.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a song that you like that I could upload into the station real quick, and hopefully it'll be I can play it before we get off the air, that people you'd want people to hear from either of your albums?
Yeah, certainly. You know, the very first song on my new album is titled Soul Contact, and the first song is called Sai Isha Sharanam, Dance with Ganesh.
S-A-I-I-S-T-S-A Sharanam. Okay, so I am going to try to upload that into Blog Talk Radio. That's what y'all are listening to. We haven't taken a break today, and I kind of had a feeling we wouldn't because this is such a topic that I love. For those of you that are just tuning into the live show, we are on Entrepreneurial Excellence Radio Show, which is part of the With Insights channel on Blog Talk Radio. And, Mike, you know, we've got three other show hosts. Iggy Garcia and Rosa Bell do our Monday night With Insights show at 6 p.m. Eastern, and they would be happy to interview you at any time, as well as Jenny Seek. She does Inner Voice and talks about art types, and she could get you on her show. And then we have Mudtoe Sasquatch, which is Mudtoe at Midnight, and he just pre-records his show. I don't think he does guests. But there's two other shows on our channel that, you know, I can send you the links to, and you can connect to them, get you some more airtime, so people can go and download. And what's great about With Insights Radio is, you know, we've been on the air about 3 years. I've been doing Entrepreneurial Excellence since June. And on average, I'm getting around 400 to 700 downloads a week. So we are impacting people and making a difference, and I think that's another perk of why I, you know, totally love the internet and its ability to reach people, especially with, you know, video and music and sound and energy. You can set that intention to share your messages and your information, you know, to anywhere and everyone. So that's exciting. So definitely, you know, stay plugged in with us, and anytime you have an event coming up, share it. I want to throw out there as well, I didn't get a chance to mention, you've connected me with, and I'm not going to say her name, her first name in Columbus, to do Kirtan for International Women's.
Radecki actually lives in Cincinnati, and she's
oh,
a
okay.
friend of mine. The other thing I was going to say is that what I've done over the last, about 3 years ago, I created what's called the Dattatreya Kirtan Institute, where I'm blending my love for Kirtan with my experience in coaching. And I've been actually doing coaching and training programs with Kirtan leaders. And I have several folks who have been working with me for several years, Devika being one of them. And she is just about to step into making her first album. She's written a lot of wonderful original chants. And she plays, you know, pretty much about every month down in Cincinnati and often tours with me. So she'll probably be with me some of these events in Ohio later on the spring.
sorry, joke, hold on.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry about that. I was getting excited and started choking. love choking on my own spit. That's great as a radio show host. I was just excited because she's going to be one of our performers for International Women's Day.
Fantastic.
Which is going to be so beautiful. I was so grateful that you just popped up into my radar because I got the invite to your Facebook event, and I'm like, that would be perfect for my show. And then to get you on Entrepreneurial Excellence Radio Show is beautiful. And to have that demonstration of the healing music, I know that for Peace House, which is one of the nonprofits I manage, Isha Foundation brought some performers up to do a little curtain and singing at our festival. And even three people on stage does amazing energetic work. So when you've, you know, got a little bigger group or, you know, one person singing, it's just a beautiful experience to share. So I'm looking forward to connecting with her and fine-tuning those details. And another aspect that I want to throw out there to you, Mike, since you do travel to a lot of the areas that I want to go to for Purpose for Women International and creating these Purpose Summits, one of my locations is Chicago. And it's a big area. There's a lot of people, a lot of metaphysical people I know, and healers sprinkled around the outskirts. And so we'll be doing a Purpose Summit in the area at some point this coming year. I'm focused right now on Columbus and Tampa, but, you know, that is on the agenda. So I'd like to put it out there. Maybe we could coordinate when you're close and you could have your group perform at the event. That would be
Please keep me in the loop on that. I'm living now in Grand Rapids, Michigan, which is only a few hours from Chicago. And so I'm going there fairly regularly, and I'm getting well tapped in with many of the Kirtan and other spiritual communities. So I have some folks I might want to connect you with there, and I have some phenomenal musicians I play with in Chicago. So it would be wonderful to do a Kirtan at that event. So, yeah, keep me in the loop for sure.
Absolutely. And, you know, what's fun about the Purpose Summit is, based on what we discover in that local community, that's how we kind of develop the quote-unquote theme or purpose of the show. And so we can kind of figure out some of the people you know and maybe some event planners, whatever community action's going on. That's kind of my research role. And we could do, I'd like to do maybe a networking fun party like before the event or maybe – because I only want to keep it like 5 hours seems to be a good time frame for a summit. So we could do a fun little party with Kirtan and more of a celebration prior to the show or even that Saturday night. So we'll figure out those details. But I think, you know, that'll be I definitely want to throw that out there. That would be beautiful. So we'll talk more about that moving forward. Thanks, everyone. We've got about 90 seconds of the live show. Let's play some of Mike's music here. Let me find it on the list of stuff. Here we go. We'll play maybe, you know, 45 seconds or a minute or so. And then, you know, is there any last things you want to say to our live audience, Mike, before we play your song and then close?
Well, I just want to say thank you for tuning in, live audience. I hope you've enjoyed and found useful what we shared here. You can find more information on me at www.mikecohenkirtan.com, and I hope to be able to interact with you in person at some time during this year.
Absolutely, and thanks again, audience, everyone. Go to our fan page, Entrepreneurial Excellence Radio Show. Tell us what you like, what you want us to play, what you don't like. If you want to be a guest, you can email me at heatherltapia@gmail.com. We're going to keep recording. So let's play Mike's song. Go ahead and say the name again.
Sai Isha Sharanam, also known as Dance of Ganesh.
Ooh, I love that. And it's on your new album, Soul Contact, which people can download again at
iTunes, any other online distributorship, or my website, MikeCohenKirtan.com.
And we're going to have all those links out up on the web, and you know, we'll be in contact with Mike as we move forward. So enjoy this little interview with Mike Cohen and Kirtan. Stay with us, folks.
Thank you, Heather.
Yeah, just to see what Mike is from. Right back.
Om Guru Brahma, Guru Vishnu, Guru Deva Maheshwara, Guru Sakshat Param Brahma Tatmai Shri Guru Rena Namaha. Ishwara Kaleshwara Parameshwara Parameshwara. Om Sai Shri Sai Om Jai Jai Sai Om. Om Maha Papa Parakshana Sai Shakti Raksha. Om Gam 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 Ganapati Yena Namaha. Om Vurabhuva Suraha Tatsare Tuvarenya Parku Devasya Tumahi Yoyo Naha Prachodaya.
Thanks for that, Mike. So tell us, I don't think we had a chance to actually talk about the creation of your music. How do you go about the process of picking the songs and composing and the chants and the mantras?
Well, you know, that's a big, interesting question. There's lots of ways that's happened. You know, I'll just say this in a rough general sense. My first album, when I was really building my kirtan scene and living in Columbus, after about a year, about 6 months of leading kirtan, I started writing originals and people liked them. And so after another 6 months of, you know, what was happening was every month I'd show up with a new chant. And if people liked it, then great. And if they didn't, then back to the drawing board. And then folks started asking me about, you know, when are you going to make an album? And I was just writing, you know, a chant every month. And so that's basically where the first album came from. Second album was a different story because I made that entire album while I was on the road. I had no apartment and I was living everywhere. And there was times when I would be coming back to Columbus to get in the recording studio and play some gigs and, you know, to be like, okay, I got 2 days and I need to write 3 songs so I can get in the producer. And I'd just sit down in somebody's moldy basement, you know, for 3 days, lock myself up, and I'd come out with a couple of chants. And, so it was a whole different process, and they showed up in many different ways. Sometimes I started with the words, as was the case with this chant. Sometimes I would start with some chord changes or a melody that I heard, and sometimes things were a little bit more traditional, kind of the way everyone did them, and other times I was being much more experimental and pulling fragments from different prayers and mantras from my spiritual lineage under the guidance of my spiritual teacher, and putting together some things that are quite unique and quite different.
Wow. And I, again, you know, I'm in awe of that creation because not having the musical sense, but, you know, now realizing that I am a musical sound being because I can drum. So everybody can play an instrument. All you have to do is hit something, whether it's a table or stomp your feet, you're making music. So that was Yeah, exactly. I felt lacking because I couldn't do it. Now I'm not lacking in that capacity, so it's kind of cool. Again, thanks so much for being a part of the show, and we'll stay in communication, and you have carte blanche approval to post anything on my wall or our fan page or call into the show any Wednesday. If you've got an event you want to do a shout-out for, don't hesitate to call in using the same number any Wednesday between 2 and 3, and we'll give you a chance to make a statement. So, what it's about.
You know, I'm writing that in my book right now, and so when that Cincinnati comes up, I'll give you a call before that, and when that Columbus comes up, I'll give you a call before that.
Depending how I'm feeling after International Women's Day, I'm going to see if maybe I can get a group of people to drive down. So we can, you know, co-create that. That'd be fun. I mean, I miss going to, I was telling people at the beginning of the show, before you called in how much fun I used to have at that church where it first started. Dancing in the aisles, and I was always in the background just like, and I was like, I didn't, you know, I loved to dance, and at the time I guess I wasn't going out, quote unquote, clubbing or hanging out with people, and that was my dance party. So I really enjoyed that.
Nice.
It was really fun. Well, thanks again, Mike, and appreciate your time. Enjoy the rest of your day and week, and keep doing what you're doing, and let us know how that's progressing, and we'll be in contact. Have a good one. Thanks so much.
Beautiful. Thank you so much,
Heather.
Take care. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. Thanks, folks. This has been the Entrepreneurial Excellence Radio Show. We've spent some great time talking about the power of sound and music and chanting and healing and expressing yourself, getting into your physical body and being present with what is specifically going on with you and aware of what's happening on emotional, physical, spiritual level and allowing yourself the opportunity to heal with that. We've had Mike Cohen from Kirtan and his journey, and he's a coach that can help you get into that body. Want to take a quick second to play a few commercials about from our sponsors. We've got a local somatic healer, Dawn Thompson of Dawn of the New Era, and she has the ability to help you out and heal you as well. So, you know, don't hesitate to give her a call. Here is how you can reach Dawn.
I am Dawn of the New Era, intuitive healer and seer.
Give Dawn a call at 614-437-9793 and schedule your healing appointment today. Thank you. www.dawnofthenewera.com.
Hi, you are invited to celebrate International Women's Day, an amazing celebration
held for the 102nd time around the world. In Columbus, Ohio, on March 8, 2013. Join us. You don't have to be a woman to come down and celebrate. We've got an amazing runway show, vendors, entertainment, food from around the world, and an opportunity to give back to your community. Go ahead and visit the website at www.iwdcolumbus.webs.com or RSVP at www.iwdcolumbus.eevent.com. Come on down and join us for this amazing opportunity to celebrate women being women. Thanks, folks, so much for being a part of our show. Without you, we wouldn't have the success and healing. Call us anytime, any Wednesday from 2 to 3:30 for your own free intuitive reading. And check into purposeforwomeninternational.org. See how you can volunteer if you're a healer or an event coordinator. Give me a call and let's co-create a purpose summit in your area. Hey, we can get Kirtan to play. So thanks again for tuning in. See you next Wednesday where we will be interviewing an amazing woman, Bo Arnold. She has a great program out there, very similar to what we were kind of talking about today, to help you get into your body and heal it. It's Heal, Transform, Heal, Transform, Sick and Tired into Healthy and Inspired. So we'll get to meet that author next Wednesday for our Meet the Author show. Thanks for tuning in to blogtalkradio.com/insights and enjoy the rest of your day. Love and light.